Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Derek. And as we record this, of course, we're recording before Memorial Day, but when people hear it, it's going to be some 3 or 4 days after Memorial Day. But, you know, there is never a time when we should not be remembering our veterans and the soldiers. And of course, Memorial Day is different than Veterans Day. Veterans Day is for all veterans. Memorial Day is for those who paid the ultimate sacrifice, those who died in combat. And I will just tell you, there are heartwarming stories of sacrifice and survival and sacrifice and loss in any war. But I think our responsibility as people who've come through and made it through wars and through battles ourselves is to cause others to remember that not everyone makes it home. So as we speak today, even though it's a weekend after, let's remember those who paid the ultimate sacrifice.
We are still struggling here in New Mexico, even though our coronavirus situation is looking better than a lot of states. To that, I know we talked about it last week, and I wanted to get an update on the lawsuit that you're looking at filing and maybe define it a little more.
Well, we actually have filed that lawsuit now, and it is speaking up for the small business owner, the man and the woman who create and keep the small business community working in New Mexico. That's the source of most of the jobs here in this state. And so the great job loss that has occurred are people who are working for small businesses. They typically are making under $40,000 a year. They've lost 40% of the jobs that have been lost. And so the class that struggles the most is paying the biggest cost under the plan put forth by this governor. If you're making $100,000 or more, you're not going to lose your job. You're going to be working from home. It'll be a high-tech job. And so, again, the governor has sided with big business. She's also siding with the wealthy instead of those people who struggle. So our lawsuit simply says that the governor does not have the right to make this determination to levy a $5,000 fine. She instead has only the power to levy a $100 fine. It is a misdemeanor, and it is handled in the magistrate court. It's very similar to a parking ticket or speeding ticket from your local police. You can get the ticket, but the law enforcement officer cannot enforce a fine on you. That's done by the courts. Of course, the ticket has an automatic fine on it. If you want to accept it, fine. But if you want to go in front of the judge, a magistrate judge, and contest it, then you can. And these tickets would be very similar. We think that the governor has taken the penalty under one law and applied it to a different one. The governor is not above the law here. If she wants the law to change, she needs to get the state legislature to change it. So our lawsuit is very simple. We think it's going to be heard within the next couple of weeks for the sake of small businesses. We hope so, because we think small businesses across the state will then reopen. But that's the status of our lawsuit. Now, as we're speaking, again, just today, we're recording this at the end of the week, and so President Trump has said that churches are going to be allowed this weekend to meet in full. That's the kind of bold leadership that people like about Trump. You may dislike him in every regard, but you cannot say that he will not put himself right into the middle of a fight. This idea that churches should be only meeting with 25% of the people there is one that should never have been in place. The way that it was enforced, the way that it was implemented, it was offensive. On Easter Sunday, the shutdown occurred the day before on a Saturday, so no legal appeals were available for Easter Sunday. So the president has stepped into the gap and said, open them up, or he would open them for us. We'll talk next week about how that has played out. But a lot of things going on right now as the nation moves to reopen every state except New Mexico.
This goes back to a comment you made a while back about the way conservatives see the world and the way liberals see the world, where conservatives are saying basically, let the restaurants open, let the businesses open. They're inherently good. If there's a few bad ones out there, punish them. But don't assume everybody's going to do wrong.
Don't make a violation out of just trying to survive. I saw just an excellent comment last week that when you're trying to feed a family, when you're trying to feed your kid And when you're trying to take care of a sick parent or a sick kid, every job, every paycheck is essential. And so this idea that we would segregate it out and close down some, leave some open, I always refer to South Dakota because that's a friend of mine. Kirstie Noem is the governor there. They never shut down business at all. They simply warned people and told businesses what the risks were and then told them to go live correctly.
So if the president opens the churches, like he says, and you're sitting at home and maybe you have a respiratory problem or you're in that age group that is more susceptible to the virus, don't go. But don't make it so the rest of us can't go.
And people have that kind of judgment. They've got that rational thinking and thought process about them. And so I think that the president is on the right track. He's also said just recently that if there is a flare-up, if there is a new spike in the fall, that he's not going to shut the country down a second time. And so now then you can see the distinct differences between him and Vice President Joe Biden, that Joe Biden says that we should not be opening right now. We will see this election play out on the management of the COVID-19 crisis. In our second segment, we're going to have an opportunity to visit with Carol White. She is the CEO of the New Mexico Restaurant Association, and she will really have a lot of important information about the struggles that our restaurants are going through. But they're examples of businesses that have already thought through how to open and reopen with safety paramount in their minds. You know, I just have to mention in this whole thing coming out of the governor's office, she at one point said that she's going to depend on peer pressure, that the police just didn't have enough forces to go and implement all of her executive orders. So she encouraged people to go out and start being the police in themselves. So in Otero County, the Democrats have started a name and shame page. That is where different people go out and they take pictures of somebody not wearing a mask. They get in their face. They begin to scream at them that they're infecting everyone else. And it is this panic. It is this setting people against each other, setting neighbor against neighbor. This is a very destructive thing that the governor has set in place. And we just have to say, why is it okay to bully in the name of health when we've been saying that bullying is never appropriate, and yet now then the governor is encouraging it, and this name and shame page that has originated in Otero County there among Democrats is something itself to be shamed about. So the harassment and the screaming that they're doing with people, that's never justified in a public place. If they don't feel like they're safe being around somebody without a mask, then don't get around them. Stay away from them and achieve your social distance. That's going to keep you safe. But I just felt like that we had to mention that because it's one of the ugly underbellies of this governor's trying to cram everybody into a mentality that says she's the only one with a voice that counts.
And that story you're discussing, when the woman that wasn't wearing the mask was confronted by the other woman, she was within 6 feet of her. So even though she's condemning her for not wearing a mask, she violated the rules of the 6-foot distancing.
So people should be screaming back at her that you're violating social distance. How come your violation is better than my violation? And so
we've got our guest coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I am talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And as promised, we have a guest. Steve?
Well, we told you in the first segment that we'll be joined by Carol White. She's the CEO of the New Mexico Restaurant Association, a longtime friend of mine, and not just a friend, but someone who's very effective in her job. Carol, thanks for being with us today. Tell us a little bit about your background before we get into the actual restaurant association business, and tell us where you came from, where you grew up, and what got you into the restaurant business.
Well, I'm a native New Mexican. I've been here all my life. I've been away for college for a couple of years, but couldn't stand it, you know. the land of entrapment brought me back. So I was born in Santa Fe, raised in Albuquerque. I had restaurants in Las Cruces for 20 years before I took the job as the restaurant association executive. And now I'm back in Albuquerque. And I work on behalf of restaurants and advocating for them and promoting them.
So you ran restaurants in Las Cruces. What were the name of those restaurants?
I had a Tatsu restaurant, which was a Japanese restaurant, and it made sense at the time because my husband at the time was Japanese. And then I had a microbrewery way before it was really popular. I was just way ahead of my time with the whole Japanese thing. And then the microbrewery was called Way Out West. And then we had the first contract for the food service at the Farm and Ranch Museum. So that was a lot of fun, too.
Well, you got into the restaurant business as an owner and operator, and then you came a CEO of the Restaurant Association. That's the only position I've known you in. Talk a little bit about that transition. How did they come looking for you? You go looking for them, and some of the more important challenges that you faced in the last few years.
I actually stopped working in restaurants right before I took the job. It was one of those things where it just became too much. We were working day in and day out, weekends and all of that. And I had twin baby girls. And so I thought, you know, if I'm ever going to see them, I'm going to have to find a different career. And luckily, at that point, then I did resign from my restaurants, which is hard to do when you own something, right? It's hard to resign. But I managed it. And the restaurant association I had been involved with as the restaurateur, I had been on their board. They knew me. They knew I wasn't working more. And they came and sought me out and said, we think you're good. Would you move to Albuquerque? And of course, I love Las Cruces. It's a nice sized town. I moved back to Albuquerque because this is where I grew up. And it's been fine, but I still miss Las Cruces. And so that's where I am now as far as advocacy efforts that we've had with the Restaurant Association. You know, what I like to explain to people is that restaurants are kind of that last bastion for service. It's the last place you're ever going to find a hostess that meets you at the door, somebody that takes your order, somebody that cooks your food. We have a lot of employees in the restaurant. And therefore, when there's employment issues like minimum wage, we're usually on the end of that that says, you know, this is really going to hurt restaurants if you raise this minimum wage. And it's because we have so many employees and so many hours involved. Same with sick leave. As everybody knows, grocery stores have managed to get rid of a lot of their employees through their self-serve kiosks and everything else. So you go in there and you may not see an employee the whole time you're there. Not true with restaurants. We've got a lot of employees. So all of the employment issues are what really make or break restaurants. And so that's what we're seeing. And of course, in these coronavirus times, we're just devastated because we haven't been able to be open. We haven't been able to make enough money to stay alive and survive. And so we're hoping to see a reopening soon. And we believe we have a date certain.
You said that you didn't have time with your girls, that you're working day and night now. Go into a little bit of the challenges of being a small business owner.
Small business owners work to the bone because they've got all of their money, you know, all of their savings and loans from the SBA or wherever you can get a loan. And you're trying to pay those back, pay your payroll, pay your food costs. And there's just so many bills coming in. My partners at the time, we had three restaurants and they wanted to start building more. And I was just like, I can't do that. You know, if you guys want to do this, more power to you, go do it. But I just don't have the energy. And then I would look at my customers and think, well, they're not working on weekends. They're not working on weeknights. There must be something more, right? So the association gives me the ability to stay in the industry with the people I love. You know, this is a great industry with wonderful people that really care about other people. I mean, that's why they go into the hospitality industry. But it also allowed me to have nights and weekends with my kids. And it's so funny, when I first took the job, I was like, are you sure you don't want me to work weekends? I can do that. You know, so I tell people there's life after restaurants. Yes.
Tell a little bit about the challenges to the restaurants in New Mexico, if you would. I know that you spoke last week on a program that I followed you on. So how many restaurants in New Mexico have shut down permanently? But talk a little bit about the real challenges that we're facing right now.
So, I mean, it's just all very heartbreaking right now. By our calculations, about 210 restaurants have probably closed permanently in New Mexico. And that's heartbreaking in and of itself, because you think about that restaurant owner who now doesn't have money to pay their mortgage. They don't have money to put their kids in school. If their kids are in college, maybe they don't have the money to pay for that now. It's just this tentacle that doesn't stop there. It keeps going. And then you think, okay, so that now that restaurant is gone, and on average, every restaurant has about 25 people, some more and some less. That's what an average is. And so you think about those 25 people who now don't have a job or income. And for right now, they have unemployment, but they're going to be permanently on unemployment because that job isn't there to go back to. And so I hear these stories on a daily basis, and it really, I'm getting emotional about it because it is that cornerstone in that one town or city. I just heard today that Three Rivers Brewery in Farmington is closing. They are that cornerstone place, right? They had a little space on Main Street, and they increased that space to two spaces, and now they're in three spaces, and they have a brewery and everything else. And I got a note from him this morning saying, we just can't go on. This is it for us. That's the triple hit right now, because of course, oil and gas is down. That's in Farmington. So natural gas is down. The coal plant is going away, and he just doesn't see a future, right? And that's happening across New Mexico right now. There is no future. We don't have any vision in this state. It's driving us all to
despair.
Yeah. So if you don't know yet, there have been two restaurants that have opened, one in Silver City and one in Ruidoso. And I don't believe they've been fined, but the governor today pulled their food permit.
Our suit will challenge that also, whether or not she can do this.
What things have we not talked about that we should have?
Restaurants are ready. Our dining rooms are ready. We're doing 6-foot spacing. Our outdoor areas are ready. We're sanitizing above and beyond what we've always done, and we've always done a lot of that. We're ready for customers to come back, and we're extremely hopeful that June 1st is going to be that date, because everybody is getting ready. They are buying food. They are ready to open, and we hope you come back, and we know you will.
Thanks again, Carol White, the CEO of the New Mexico Restaurant Association, has been our guest today.
Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Steve Pierce and I will be right back with more Inside New Mexico.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico with the chairman of our Republican Party, Steve Pierce. I understand we've had some discouraging comments made around the state.
Comments that were made at a gathering in Truth of Consequences. The Republican Party, as soon as we heard them, we put out a comment immediately saying that anytime you threaten harm, that's just wrong. It doesn't matter if you intended it as a joke. It doesn't matter if you had implications that were somewhere else. But likewise, Joe Biden made comments that I think have to be called out also.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
So this idea that a black voter doesn't have the right even, or maybe the capability, you're not sure exactly which it was that Joe Biden was referring to. But the vice president has certainly indicated that black voters don't have the ability or the right to vote for anything except Democrats. That really is an offensive position to many. I know black voters who are probably going to vote for the vice president if he hadn't said things like this. And they're strong Democrats, but they're tenaciously independent. And they say, I will not be told how to think or how to vote. And so, yes, I think both sides in this environment that we're facing right now are making statements. They need to be careful and they need to be more thoughtful.
I have a clip I want to play for you now from the U.S. Senate. This is Senator Ted Cruz interviewing Robert Epstein about the manipulation that big social media companies like Facebook and Google have had in previous elections and could easily have in the upcoming election.
As I understand your background, You're not a Republican, and nor are you a conservative. Is that accurate?
That would be an understatement.
And indeed, you're the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today.
Correct.
So you're a respected academic. You testified before this committee that Google's manipulation of votes gave at least 2.6 million additional votes to Hillary Clinton in the year 2016. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I want to make sure I understand. You personally supported and voted for Hillary Clinton.
I was a very strong public supporter of Hillary Clinton, yes.
So you're not dismayed that people voted for her, but your testimony is that Google is, through bias in search results, manipulating voters in a way they're not aware of.
On a massive scale. And what I'm saying is that I believe in democracy. I believe in the free and fair election more than I have any kind of allegiance to a candidate or a party.
And looking forward, if I understood your testimony correctly, you said in subsequent elections, Google and Facebook and Twitter and big tech manipulation could manipulate as many as 15 million votes in a subsequent election?
In 2020, if all these companies are supporting the same candidate, there are 15 million votes on the line that can be shifted without people's knowledge and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace.
Now, you described the Go Vote reminder, and you said it wasn't a public service announcement, but rather manipulation. Can you explain how? I'm not sure everyone followed the details of that.
Well, sure. If on Election Day in 2016, if Mark Zuckerberg, for example, had chosen to send out a Go Vote reminder, say, just to Democrats, and no one would have known if he had done this, that would have given that day an additional at least 450,000 votes to Democrats. And we know this without doubt because of Facebook's own published data, because they did an experiment that they didn't tell anyone about during the 2010 election. They published it in 2012. It had 60 million Facebook users involved. They sent out a Go Vote reminder, and they got something like 360,000 more people to get off their sofas and go vote who otherwise would have stayed home. The point is, I don't think that Mr. Zuckerberg sent out that reminder in 2016. I think he was overconfident. I think Google was overconfident. All these companies were. I don't think he sent that out without monitoring systems in place. We'll never know what these companies are doing. But the point is, in 2018, I'm sure they were more aggressive. We have lots of data to support that. And in 2020, you can bet that all of these companies are going to go all out. And the methods that they're using are invisible. They're subliminal. They're more powerful than most any effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences. And I've been in the behavioral sciences for almost 40 years.
Some scary information there. I think we'd all agree that none of us want that kind of manipulation being done, whether on the Republican side or the Democrat side. Last week, Steve Pierce was a guest with Richard Eads on KTRC in Santa Fe. Let's listen to a clip from that interview.
We need to quit kidding ourselves here, Steve. I mean, this is about the health of people. I'm going to take a chance on getting somebody sick. Now, can the Democratic Party file a suit against you and the Republican Party if you get people sick? Or can private citizens or business people file a lawsuit against you if you cause somebody to get sick, infected, get really sick, and maybe die?
No, I don't think you can say the Republican Party is doing that at all. What we're asking for is a clarification of the law. We think the law says one thing. The governor thinks it says another thing. That's what courts are for. We're not mandating anybody to open. If people feel like that they can't open safely, that's up to them.
No, it's not. That's my point. No, it's not up to them. You cannot open a massage parlor. Cannot open a gymnasium. Maybe in a couple of weeks, but right now you cannot. In-restaurant dining is not allowed. It is not up to you.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not up to us. A judge will interpret if the governor can give you a $5,000 fine or if she's exceeding her authority. We think that she's exceeding her authority. So that's the only question that we're asking. Businesses then will determine if they want to or if they don't, and then the governor can take them into court and
here's my problem
gave
with
you a ticket and you got to pay for it.
Here's my problem with this, Steve. It seems to me like you're kind of making, you want things both ways. You want to say, well, this is a very limited argument, but it's not.
No, all we're saying is that the law should be the law. The governor cannot make her own law. The governor is not above the law. And that's our only point. If the law needs to be changed, then she needs to call a special session and get the law changed. She cannot make up law, make up her own penalties, just because this situation is the way it is. And no matter who it is, I heard somebody saying that today the president's not above the law. I agree. The governor's not above the law either. And I agree with that.
We want to thank Richard Eads for having Chairman Pierce on his radio show in an area that's not generally open to conservative ideas. However, if you are interested in learning more about the Republican Party of New Mexico, you can stay engaged with what's happening by going to the Republican Party's website at www.gopnm.org. You can get the latest news, upcoming events, information about our elected officials, voter resources, and all kinds of important and useful information about the party and its mission. You can also listen to previous editions of this program. Check out the party's Facebook page and see what's going on the party's Twitter account. The handle is @NewMexicoGOP. And we also want to remind you that the Republican Party is always looking for volunteers to help them with their mission to win New Mexico for President Trump and to turn the roundhouse red. You can call the party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. I look forward to meeting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.